Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session with Steve and Jim back together in the house with a new whiskey to talk about.
Back together and it feels so good.
It does. And dude, I've missed you. I've been gone for 2 weeks. not trying to be weird about it, but I've missed you. It's been a while. And thank you for picking me up at the airport last night and keep my drink going and stopping me from embarrassing myself, which is not always easy. But I did bring back with me.
Listen, you did a. First of all, you were able to get the Stag Junior, which is never in Ohio.
Happy birthday again, and there's your birthday gift.
Very much. That's a huge get by you. Stag Junior is just to me is just a solid bourbon all the way around. Like if I were making a bourbon, I would want it to come out like Stag Junior. So you getting that for me, I much appreciate. But that's not actually what we're drinking today. What we're drinking today is it's a Knob Creek Select Rye, and this rye the bourbon was picked by the Ohio Liquor Board,
All right,
like the state liquor agency, because Ohio has some weird rules with,
anything related to alcohol, to be honest.
Right, anything dealing with alcohol, it's really bizarre, so... Essentially, the state owns the liquor. So when you go to a store, like the state dictates everything, price, what stores get. So there's a store that's close to my house, and then there's another store that's close to Jim's house. So what is available at the store by my house is not going to be necessarily going to be available at the store by your house.
Right.
I mean, vast, vast differences, right? I mean, even with some of your more common and basic things that you wouldn't think that there would be a difference on, like the store over on 150th by Giant Eagle, they get, 20 Jim Beams, but the Menotti's by my place, they get 40. So the allocation at the stores is completely different, and it's not necessarily based on demographics or revenue or whatever. It's just at the whim of the state. It's right. Really bizarre. So anyway, so the state picks out a specific barrel of Knob Creek. They bottle it up. There's only so many bottles. You can only do it once. And it'll be, again, one barrel completely different than this one, but it'll be the State of Ohio Liquor Board pick. So I picked up one for us, and it rings in at... 115 proof.
Damn.
It's a rye. Most whiskey, for the most part, is made from corn, right?
Bourbons are at least 50%, right. 51% corn.
Right. And like, I think it can be anywhere from 51 to like 70% corn, for the most part. But there's a few like Weller and Pappy Van Winkle and all that stuff made from wheat. Right. Where wheat is the dominant
grain,
grain used to make the whiskey. So like corn is the dominant one in bourbon, for again, like the Pappy Van Winkles and your Larceny and your Weller, your wheat bourbons, they're predominantly made, 51 to 70% wheat, rye, same deal. It's 51 to 70, whatever the percentage is of rye. And all those things create a really different flavor profile for the whiskey that you're drinking.
Agreed.
All right, and they're all very similar. Bourbon and rye are literally the same thing, just made with different things. They taste really, really close, really, really similar, but they're really different.
you just contradict yourself.
I know, but it's true.
And you're right. Yes. Right?
I mean, like, because bourbon is bourbon is bourbon, but you've got... what's made in Kentucky, what's made in Tennessee, and you've got these ryes and all this other stuff, and they're all very similar in color, similar in feel, and smell, but they can all be really, really distinct and different, which is why we love them, and which is what makes this so unique, is that we can only get it once, because it's one bottle per customer. So I can't even go in today and buy another bottle. They've marked me on the list. I bought my one. That's it.
Wow. Aren't you exclusive? But it's really good. It's, I mean, we're drinking it out of our fancy Glencairn glasses. I'm gonna give it a 92. You might bump it up from that.
That's literally the same exact score that I gave it. It's got the punch. The flavor is really good. There is a fair amount of alcohol burn on the back end.
I'll deal with it.
You know, but I mean, it's coming in.
What was it again?
It comes in at 115 proof.
Yikes, 57.5. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's solid. Thank you for bringing it, and enjoy your Stag Junior for your birthday gift.
Which the Stag is actually higher than.
Yeah, that's 63-something%. That
it's 100. It's 127.5
proof. I'll wait till I'm at your place. You're at your place, and I'm getting a lift
right,
home.
Like there's no cars. There's no keys.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely save it for the.
We'll lock away all the guns and the sharp objects.
Sounds like the right move. Before we get, so I was in New York the last 2 weeks, and we talked about that a fair bit. And there's more stories to come from that. I did watch a Democratic debate while fairly inebriated, but that's another story. We'll get to that. But there was an interesting story that I sent to you about a...
Hold on. So the biggest thing that you're kind of overlooking is that you were in New York, and this is 9/11 this week.
Oh, true. Yeah.
You know, and we don't spend a lot of time on this. But I think it's important because 9/11 literally changed my life. It changed all our lives, but it changed mine, reshaped my life, and kind of literally repositioned me. You know, I mean, I, you know, had gone to West Point and then decided to transfer and go to the University of Massachusetts, which was a decision that I've always been really, really comfortable with. And when I made it, I thought this is exactly the right move. I had the... You know, blessing from the family. Everyone was okay with the fact that I was leaving West Point and going to a different institution.
You wanted to go to law school,
I mean, there's
multiple reasons.
Like,
right,
there's like trying to explain it. There's is not necessary, but I made this decision to leave, and I was really comfortable with that. And a lot of it had to do with I had multiple members of my family that were in the military who said it's okay. You know, I mean, because leaving, getting into West Point, getting accepted, like, you have to get, you know, letters from a congressman and a senator, and you have to, you know, do community service and, you know, play a sport and have a job and be able to tell some harrowing story on why you deserve to be there. And there's all these factors that kind of differentiate it from getting into any other school, right? Ivy League or else. And once you get in, you're... You know, a part of the military, and you're immediately just kind of blanketed with everything that is the American flag to a degree, right? Like, I mean, it's just like you need to be the ultimate patriot if you're going to be there, because one, they're spending a lot of money on you to turn you into the perfect soldier to go out and lead, you know, the U.S. military.
Sure. Yeah. Whether you're being trained to be a military officer,
right? Whether you're at, you know, the Army, West Point or Annapolis, or, you know, the Air Force Academy or Coast Guard Academy, whatever it is, like it's a huge deal to be there, and they really patriotism. So leaving was a big deal, and getting comfortable with leaving was to me an even bigger deal. So I finally get comfortable with it. And then 9/11 happens, and as soon as I realized that my country was under attack, we were probably going to war, I felt this immediate sense of guilt and pressure, like I had made a dreadful mistake. I had let my country down. I had let my family down, because it, as soon as 9/11 happened, it felt like, yeah, everything was changing, and yes, we were going to war. And as a kid who grew up in the 80s, I didn't understand war. I didn't have World War II or Vietnam. Like, I had heard about it. I read about it. I learned about it. But I didn't, there was no major wars. Like, sure, we had conflicts, you know. And really, like, you know, the first war in Iraq wasn't a war, right? Like, we went to war
in 6 weeks, yeah.
Right, we went to war. We dropped some big bombs. George Bush said we won, and we all thought it, you know, it was over. And they talked about the Patriot missiles or whatever, and that was it.
Yeah.
So that was what I thought war was, until those terrorists brought a real war to our front door, And having been in a position where I could have fought that war and helped us win it, I left. I immediately, like, and this is 100% selfish, right? I mean, given what happened on that day, but that's just my experience. I felt like I had let my country down, and the weight and the guilt of those, you know, 3,000, you know, people that I watched die in the first tower, and however many other 1,000 people that died in the second tower, like, all those deaths fell, it felt like, on my shoulders. And it took me a long time to, I'm a small piece of a giant cog in the world, but when you feel like you were at the front of the line and then you jump out of line, not even really able to get back in line, it just, and it fucked with me.
You felt like it was, you know, at the time you left the line, it was like, okay, you don't need me, and all of a sudden the shit hits the fan, and you're like, damn it, I'm not there.
Right. That was the thing. You know, and one of my good friends who I've reconnected with, I played with, we were both fullbacks, at the time, because that was my first year at UMass, he left school. You know, he was from the, he was coached by Petten.
Mike Petten, the Syracuse coach? No.
Yeah, so you're thinking Mike Petten was a defensive coordinator here in Cleveland, and now he's a defense, or he was a head coach here in Cleveland.
Right. He was in Buffalo,
yep. And now he's a defensive coordinator in Green Bay. His dad was this legendary coach. In like Eastern Central Pennsylvania, Central Bucks West. And I played with a couple of guys who played for him. And one of those guys, we all went to UMass together, and one of them, he said he couldn't stand not being in the fight. So he left UMass, left the football team. He was a scholarship guy, and joined the military, and has only recently got out of the military, but like it, I mean, that's how it impacted us.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
as a generation.
Well, I mean, oh my God, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on the name, but the Arizona
Pat Tillman.
Thank you, geez. Who the book about his life is fascinating and amazing, and Pat Tillman literally, like when that happened, said, "I got to be part of this," and he gave up an NFL career.
So. Another connection I have to that is that a guy I played football with, Marcel Shipp, played with Pat Tillman at the Phoenix Cardinal, Arizona Cardinals. And so he was on the team when Pat told the coaches and the team that he was leaving to join the military. And Marcel said it was the most, and listen, Marcel is one of my really good friends from college, played in the NFL. He's a dude from New Jersey. You know, he is, a stand-up guy, but like, he's a black dude from Patterson, New Jersey. So, you know, he's got a little...
In Patterson, that's just the way things go.
Right. But he said it was literally the most heroic thing he had ever seen. When Pat Tillman left that team, to go do what he did. And he went on to be a special forces guy and, you know, was a hero, saved lives, gave up his life in a really horrific situation. But like it just, every time 9/11 comes around, it really gives me a hard time, with the loss of life and how it just changed everything for us so much. Right. I mean, it just like, sure. And on the one hand, we're safer than we've ever been, but with that safety, I think we paid a price in terms of trust, right? Like we just don't trust anything anymore. And maybe that's good because, again, it keeps us safe, but it's also terrifying just because I think it while we're safer, I think we're still very, very vulnerable.
And so I have probably a different perspective. I was living in Boston when that happened. I was 30 years old. And when the attacks...
You were an hour away from me.
I was, yeah. And when the attacks happened, I didn't fully grasp what we were dealing with when the first news started coming in. And then I was just numb for the majority of the day. And I just remember so two of the planes left Logan Airport. One of my friends, her like fourth grade teacher was on one of the planes and died. The backup quarterback from WVU, when I was there, had gotten some job on Wall Street and ended up being in one of the towers and died in the towers. On 9/11, so it. I mean, these weren't people that were close to me or whatever, but I was one person removed. Or I remember watching Chris Gray play ball, And so, yeah, it changed a lot of things, and it changed the whole nature of, do we feel safe at home? Because let's face it, America had not been attacked since Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And Pearl Harbor wasn't even really
right. I mean,
here. It was in
right.
Hawaii.
It was Hawaii.
I mean, which, yeah. I'm not trying to be a dick, but,
no, but
we don't feel that exactly. at home. This was Manhattan. This is the Twin Towers. Every time I watch a rerun of The Sopranos, and you see Tony Soprano driving along the, you know, the George Washington Bridge, and you see the Twin Towers in the background as they're playing, you know,
woke
this morning, got myself a gun, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm like, fuck, they're gone. And I was in Manhattan this weekend.
Yeah.
And they're not there. And so, yeah, I think a lot of perspective, I think, has been lost on 9/11 because it really was that big of a deal. And now 19 years later,
so,
18 years later.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you remember what the giant scandal was that was going on when 9/11 hit?
In terms of government?
In terms
so,
of
the, so just Bush, the scandal,
everything
Bush
that
had just
people
been
were
elected.
Talking about.
Bush had just been elected. No, I don't.
So, it was a California congressman, Gary
oh,
Condit.
Oh, Gary Condit. Oh, fuck, yes, yes.
And Sandra, like, so...
Sandra Levy, yes.
Sandra Levy is a girl from Cleveland, by the way, who, like, was missing...
I didn't know she was from Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah, Sandra Levy was from Cleveland. And I think she was an intern for Gary Condit. And there was, you know, a rumored affair... Where, you know,
I think now a verified affair.
Yeah, well, it was at the time it was a rumored affair, but sure. There was an affair between the two of them, and then she ends up missing, and then she ultimately ends up dead, and it was widely suspected that Gary Condit either killed her or had her killed because she was going to come out about their affair. There was a chance that he was going to run for president, and he was the perfect, you know, clean-cut choir boy look where it
the
seemed...
The California guy. I don't remember who was that. It was Southern California somewhere.
Yeah, something like that. But he was like kind of like the perfect ready-made cookie-cutter presidential type
he,
of
he was the Gary Hart part two, ironically, also
right.
derailed because of a sexual scandal.
But, I mean, so she ends up, you know, murdered... and I think they ultimately ended up pinning it on like some Mexican dude, you know, some, you know,
Central American. It was
yeah.
not Mexico, but yeah, but they, you say pinned it on him because you're not convinced that he was actually the killer.
I don't know.
Man. I don't either.
I mean,
I don't
like,
either. I don't think Gary Condit did it.
I don't, but did he have something to do with it?
I don't know.
That was a big scandal. Like, and it's funny cause I literally was sitting in my dorm room, waiting for Nasty Nate, and Nasty Nate never showed up that day to our room. But, you know, the most fucked up part was I was in Massachusetts. My family's in Ohio. You know, so I'm far away from home. And that was the first time, you know, I had gone to West Point. I had jumped out of a helicopter. I had been shot at. I had, you know, I've been in the gas chamber. You know, I fought a Army Ranger underwater. Like, you couldn't shake me, right? I walked onto that campus in Amherst and I was shit. I was just like, listen, these dudes literally fucked with me to the point where they could have killed me. So there's absolutely nothing that's going to happen while I'm here that can shake me. And then they flew planes into the Twin Towers and I felt like a helpless child. Like, all I wanted was my mom. I just wanted my mom. When that happened, all I wanted to be home. I wanted to be held by my mother. That's the only thing I wanted, and I was too far away to drive. There was no way that I could get in a fucking plane. Like, they downed
right.
all the planes, so I just couldn't get home. And the only thing I could do was go to the football locker room. And slowly, all the players ended up there. Coaches never made a call. This is before cell phones. This is before social media. We didn't, as football players, we didn't know what else to do but go to the locker room, and we did. There were guys who were trying to get a hold of their parents because they worked somewhere near the Twin Towers. There were guys who had girlfriends there. There were, J-Rob's, his dad was a janitor. Down there, died. You know, it was just one of the worst things that has ever happened in my life. But it, you know, the guys that I was in that locker room with on that day, I can literally call up any single one of them, and I think that that had a lot to do with it. Like, we didn't... So, we had a game. Like, so, I think 9/11 happened...
On Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. We had a game on Saturday. It was supposed to be the first night game at our stadium in Amherst, but we had to send our lights, because they were mobile, we had to send them to New York so they could put the lights, you know, like, while they were searching for bodies.
Oh, wow, geez.
Yeah, so they needed the lights so that they could search through the night and pull the rocks off and pull people out that were dead or alive. And they pulled a few people out alive that Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, we got a round of, you know, like, we were given, you know, kind of accolades because our lights went down there. And without the lights, who knows, they may not have been able to find those bodies. Sure. So it just, it was.
you're very emotional, obviously. It hits you.
It does. Because I feel like I fucked up by not being able to be there and be in the fight. And then there's just the gravity of the situation. And
I mean, I know you. You know. I know you very well. And you're the kind of guy who, when there's trouble, you want to be able to use the gifts you've been given. You're a big, strong guy. And being left outside of that fight, I'm sure, tore you up, especially because of...
one of those things where, listen, I'll never start a fight, but I, you know... Right, I'll finish it. And I feel like they brought a fight... They brought a fight to me, and this is the one fight that I backed down from, and I feel like
you
I
didn't back up. Down. You were on the sidelines, but you were on the sidelines not because you chose to be. I'm not trying to make this into a therapy session. I don't want to go too far down this road. But I mean, well said, and we've been, you know, on this for a bit, and it is like I was just in New York this weekend and the last 2 weeks, so the you know being in New York on 9/11 crossed my mind, and I have a funny thing actually because. You and I have had a bunch of conversations about how you hate shitty comics, and I like. I'm as a comedy fan, you know, I'm defending bad comedy all the time. I have multiple friends who make 9/11 jokes. Most of them are 10 to 12 or more years younger than me, and I get annoyed with them. I don't ever voice it. I don't ever say like you shouldn't do that joke because I never say you shouldn't do this. But on a personal level, if you don't get it. Then it annoys me. Offends is not the word I want to use because I don't want to sound like I'm like, oh, you've offended me, I'm hurt. But when you joke about something that you don't truly appreciate and understand, it annoys the fuck out of me.
I just feel like there's certain things that should be off limits.
I see. I'm very guarded about that.
Like personally, right? Like individually, not a signed document or an official statement. But I just feel like personally... Certain things, like you know what, I have the world to make fun of, but I'm gonna avoid Pearl Harbor jokes. I'm gonna avoid 9/11 jokes. I'm gonna avoid, you know.
And my thing, Steve, is
because you know what, if you're gonna
go there, if you're gonna go there, you better make it good.
That's right, like you better
fucking nail. If it's a wisecrack, fuck off.
Right, I mean, it better be Dave Chappelle birdshot buckshot funny.
Right,
which
absolutely
was hilarious. By the way,
you're right. Yes.
The first one go pepper you.
I have gotten so much shit in the last week with a few friends of mine on the Cleveland comedy scene over Dave Chappelle's Sticks and Stones and my defense of it. And to them I say, deal, because fuck it. It was a great comedy special. All right. I want to talk politics. I want to talk about the Democratic debate because I actually watched more of that than I'd care to admit to. Now, in my defense, I did inebriate myself enough to make it tolerable. Good. But
so with the debates, I told you I wasn't going to watch, and I wasn't going to watch because I was really amped about watching Thursday Night Football. I'm a football fanatic. I love it. I just consume football nonstop between my phone, TV, you know, Thursday through Monday night, and then, you know, mix in college. But the game was really bad with the Buccaneers and the Panthers, and I think that
no, you're a big Cam Newton fan. I heard he looked terrible.
I love Cam Newton, and I think that Cam Newton should get on the phone with Andrew Luck, and they should have a conversation.
Wow, that bad, huh? I didn't watch any of it. I just heard he looked terrible.
He threw a couple balls, and I'm like, oh, he's good. He's fine, right? Like he threw a couple Cam Newton, you know, dudes draped over him, but delivers a laser, right? He threw one to Christian McCaffrey. on the sideline. McCaffrey's covered. Safety's coming down. There is a window the size of my dick. And somehow...
Is that supposed to be big or small?
Yeah, you know what?
Oddly, in this case, you're talking about... the size of your middle finger. Let's go with that. Which is also large. Given the middle finger. Steve walks into his own...
Walks into my own dick.
His own dick. And that's exactly what I was saying.
He threw a Jan jumps out. So he threw an amazing pass. We'll just say it was very accurate. It got in there, but after that, he looked like a complete shit show. Just making really bad decisions, like losing control of the ball. He was also getting hit every other play. He was getting hit. Right, like they still haven't solved their offensive line problems. Cam, he may need to retire. Anyway, this was supposed to be about the Democratic debate. So anyway, what ended up happening, the game was terrible. So I flipped over to the debate and was just, listen, here, my position is the only way you're going to solve the gun problem is if you go after the manufacturers. Right, you don't need to make any rules and laws and all that other shit, capacity, all that stuff. None of that's going to make a difference. The biggest thing you have to do is go with the gun manufacturers and say, listen, you can only provide weapons to U.S. military and U.S. police forces, state, sheriff, whatever. And then anything else, you can't sell to Dick's, you can't sell to Walmart, you can't sell, you have to set up a special directory where only military and police can obtain XYZ weapons, period. Manufacturers, you cannot make available these particular weapons, and that is it. And if you do that, you're violating U.S. law, and blah, blah, blah. And if you want to sell to any other country, you can, but these are the rules and laws here. If you do that, then that is how you fix the gun problem in this country. Anything else than that, you're not going to fix it. You're probably going
to
make it worse.
Well, there's more to it, right? Because there's also what's out there.
There's literally nothing you can do about that.
Right. So you're
not a thing.
I mean, you're basically borderline on the Mike Wood Jr. model of stop bringing them in, and then when they come out, they're actually leaving rather than refueling the monster.
Yes, absolutely. But that's the only way that you're going to fix it. And...
We were talking the Dem debate though. Where did you turn on the Dem debate when that was just being discussed?
Well, yes, because Cory Booker, Beto O'Rourke we're going to take your AR-15s and these. No. Here's the deal. One, you're not taking anything that I've already purchased. You're just not.
Right.
And I don't think Beto or Cory or anyone. The only person actually, Kamala Harris. I feel like she is the only one who has the balls to say. We're taking these specific guns. It's not a buyback. We're coming in and we're taking them. Kamala Harris to me has evolved from a person that I was really a champion for to a person that I think just should not be in the White House.
Wow.
Her reaction, her response to a lot of things, like just she, I was all a fan.
You were, definitely.
And now I'm not. And I've soured on. There were a lot of people that I wasn't sure about, but I've soured on Beto's whole thing with guns.
I'm done with Beto.
Done?
Done.
He's out.
I'm done with Joe Biden.
Is another one listen, you call it ageism, you call it whatever the fuck. That dude is past his prime, to put it gently.
So, right? I've said on the show before, I've been a fan of Joe Biden for a long time. I was a fan of his in 1988 when he first got... What's that?
That's it. Never mind.
All right. I was a fan of the guy. He got kind of thrown out of the loop because of a scandal involving plagiarizing a college paper, which is fucking hilarious by modern standards. But I watched him, and my two big takeaways from the Democratic debate were, one, Joe Biden looked like Jim Carrey in The Mask. Mm-hmm. He looked weird, just weird.
Well, because they're trying to make him look younger. Young, so they're
weird.
Doing facial procedures
I hate to make it about appearances. And one thing that drives me nuts, people say, well, if that was a man being judged, he wouldn't be. I'm judging Joe Biden, period. I am. I'm saying
a lot of people
He looked like a freak. Secondly, I was hearing just stream of consciousness, get out talking points shit.
Yeah, Joe Biden's whole thing right now is, stop asking me these damn questions about stuff I don't care about. I only want to talk about things 1, 2, and 3, and you keep bringing up A, B, and C. You know, he's like a fucking SNL character. And
I was told there would be no math. It was
literally
a Chevy Chase joke from the 1970s by Gerald Ford. Yes. And that's what Joe Biden looked like. And it also really bothered me how George Stephanopoulos structured the debate towards the primary major candidate. So it was, okay, there's 10 of you up here, but Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I'm going to focus the next 20 minutes on you three.
Yeah.
And, oh, the rest of you are there too. And good luck with the time good luck with the scraps we throw your way. I thought it was a fucking debacle. I was embarrassed. I thought Joe Biden looked terrible. Beto O'Rourke, and we've talked about this both on and off air, how Beto O'Rourke is like, yeah, you looked really good when you were running against the most dislikable person in politics, meaning Ted Cruz. Now you're playing in the big pond, and you're kind of a phony
douchebag. Well, and I agree. Like, he's not genuine. The other thing is, he's not genuine. He doesn't have that sincerity. Everyone talks about, oh, he's a passionate speaker, just like Obama. No.
He's a passionate speaker, but
like Obama talked, and we all, like, everybody's panties got wet.
Yep.
Period.
Mine, I remember.
Right, it's just like, Obama speak, I was wet, like, drop them, we're doing this.
I literally said, when Obama spoke at the 2006.
In Denver.
And I literally called my dad that day and said, I just saw the first black president of America.
A lot of people said that. There's a lot of people who said felt it. And
ended up being right.
And ended up being exactly right. People try to put Beto O'Rourke in that category. It's like, listen, Obama won at everything he did, literally, right?
President of the Harvard Law Review.
Yeah,
got into Harvard Law School without any, familial.
Right.
It wasn't
a legacy thing. It was a you're that good thing. And then
after going to Occidental and then transferring, I mean, he started at Occidental. He didn't start at, an Ivy League. He ended up at Columbia, he was not a gravy train guy. He got into Columbia from Occidental, right?
But the school I got into was harder.
whatever. None of y'all got into WVU, so yeah.
I think I got into WVU because I woke up one morning.
You're a dick, but you're not wrong. You could be accurate and an asshole at the same time.
I mean, I was 10 years old and I made myself a bowl of Lucky Charms. And
all right, stop it. That's all I'm going to do. I will fight back after one more comment. Go ahead. Such a dick.
Yeah, like three more, but I was waiting on this.
Because UMass is exactly the Harvard kids are like, oh, I couldn't get into UMass. I might as well go here.
I'm sorry. Again, did you get into Harvard? No, you didn't.
I did not. You did?
I did.
Oh, good for you.
Got into Princeton.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I didn't go there, but you know where I did go?
You want to say that?
I did go to the West Point Military Academy.
Well, good for you! Move on, my friend. This is not going to go anywhere good for anyone.
What the fuck were we talking about?
I don't even remember.
The Dem debates.
Yes.
They sucked. Like, they sucked.
Wow. And way to use that UMass education to nail down that with the verbal amazingness that you just did. All right. So we both agree that I watched the debates. It was awful. The Democratic Party needs to get their fucking head out of their ass Donald Trump again.
Yes. And here's the thing. The whole gun thing is
it's a losing argument.
It's a losing argument, and I will not vote for someone who is openly advocating for sticking a dick in the ass of the Second Amendment, period. And a lot of people will look at me and say, as a black man, how could you say that? Gun violence kills a lot of black men, blah, 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 yada, yada. I will tell you that the Second Amendment has saved the lives of a lot of black men, right? Like from the, and, you know, like literally from the 1800s till today.
Sure.
You know, like the ability. I mean, whether it's Martin Luther King family or
in 1870, and you had a shotgun in your house, you were a hell of a lot safer.
You were a hell of a lot safer if you didn't. Period. And there are a lot of black families, whether it's, you know, racial violence intention or it's gang violence intention. You know, the ability to have a firearm in your house is critical. And here's the deal about the Second Amendment. Second Amendment doesn't say you have a right to arms that are the least effective and least scary. You just have a right to bear arms. So I'm going to take that as I don't have a limit. I also don't want a limit. So people will say, well, an AR-15 is not a good home.
Which it's not.
Home, if okay, that's fine. But like, you don't have the right to tell me what gun I feel. Like, maybe I feel most comfortable with this gun. I'm not worried about being accurate. I'm not worrying about being a marksman. I don't care about a bullet going through the other wall. What I care about is the thing that I think can help me defend myself the best. I don't give a fuck about your opinion or some cop's opinion or some dude on YouTube. Whatever gun I feel I need to defend myself, my home, and my kingdom is the gun that I'm going to use. You will not tell me and dictate to me that you don't like the gun that I choose, so I should lose it. Go fuck yourself all the way to hell. I'll use whatever the fuck I want. And listen, if you're a gun owner, you need to train on it, and you need to be as good on it as you can be, right? Like fucking Keanu Reeves in Training for John Wick, dude became obsessed with guns. And everyone who owns one and everyone who has a home, who lives in a place, should probably have one, right? Unless you're just super crazy.
Well, all right. So I don't want to go down the whole. Let's talk about which guns are used for best for home defense. I totally disagree with you on AR-15s. You know that we've had this argument.
I don't have an AR-15. What I do have is an AR-10 pistol.
All right.
Right, which is kind of, it looks like an AR-15, but it's a little bit more. It's a little smaller. It's a little bit more compact. And
I will always stand by the pump shotgun. But the bigger point is the Democrats getting up there and saying, we're going to come in and clean up this gun mess by taking shit away from you, is a losing political strategy, unachievable, and stupid.
It's completely, the unachievable
is huge, yeah.
It's a huge thing, right? So the reality is, they're going to come in, like, well, we're going to come in and we're going to take your AR-15. How are you going to do it? Where are you going to start?
Is it literally going to be armed, you know, body armor wearing police officers coming into homes and removing shit? Because I'm not cool with that.
The best thing you can do, what are you going to do? Put something in the newspaper and say, everyone who has this gun, come and show up here and give it up?
112th and 10th and... Right. No.
I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Right, like I'm not going anywhere and giving you anything. I don't care if you give me money.
Beto O'Rourke doesn't get it, fucking amazing.
And the only way they can do it, gun buyback. They're like, oh, we'll give you 100% cost.
So fucking dumb.
Here's the thing, fuck you. No, you're not. The only way you're gonna get me to give this thing back is if you give me like 100 times cost.
Yeah, right.
No, not even twice.
You're right.
Like you have to give me some absurd number where I can never, because. Depending on the gun and whatever happens, right? Like, you could have a collector's item for a gun, a weapon, whatever, and be able to sell it for some absurd price. We've seen it at, I mean, like, look at Sotheby's.
Look at our fucking studio. So, the firearm in our studio is a .303 British Enfield, which was an assault weapon in its time, which was 1915.
I mean, it's got a magazine.
It does have a magazine, but it's not removable, so it would not be classified. But anyway, I paid $90 for that at a gun show in Indiana because my dad was always fascinated with that firearm, so I gave that to him as a birthday gift. And it's kind of cool. It's historical. It's really cool. Who knows where it's been?
Right.
But
who
if you
killed?
So I right. In what continents? And I mean, it's been around for 100 years, possibly. I paid $90 for it. If you offered me $1,000 for that gun right now, I'd tell you to fuck off.
Go fuck.
Not because of what it means to you. Yeah, exactly. I gave it to my dad as a birthday gift. My dad's gone, and it's it's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Now, if you offer me $20,000, I'm like, yeah, it's half a new truck. I'll do that because I am for sale.
Agreed. But, I mean, the same thing, like, the whole idea of we're going to do a government buyback. Like, fuck you. One, I didn't buy it from you.
Right.
So you're not buying anything back. And you're going to use tax money that I paid you. Right, like, so you're going to buy back.
I never thought of it from that angle. But
you're
going to
buy back my.
You make me pay to the right. Like you're going to steal something.
You're
going to
buy something from me that you never owned. Call it a buyback using money that I gave you. Fuck off.
I never thought of it from that angle. That's a good point.
How else are they going to buy it back?
You're 100% right. I just never thought of it that way.
All the money they're making from Iran.
All right.
You see what that dude did?
No.
Trump is saying that he wants to give Iran like a $15 billion line of credit so that they can come back in line with the Obama deal.
I did see, I did see some of that, which is hilarious considering he blew that thing up.
Yeah. And he's going to give them money, which he and all his followers, Obama, he gave them pallets of cash.
Right.
He gave them pallets of cash. Like, you're about to give them $15 billion. And the reason why I'm saying, so he's saying a $15 billion line of credit, but the line of credit is payable by oil.
Is there any oil in Iran? I haven't been paying attention.
Just a little bit.
A bit, okay.
Right? Just enough so that they'll pay off $15 billion in about 3 months.
Is it going to really take that long? I'm shocked.
Yeah, I mean, that's about how long it would. I looked it up.
$15
billion. That's fucking absurd.
It is.
Anyway.
That's why I choked.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm like, all right.
You good? All right.
I'm back. All right. So this has been fun. I want to talk about a few different things, though.
All right,
and one of the things I want to talk about is how many times have we heard stories about police did this based on an officer smelling marijuana, and therefore everything was wide open?
A ton.
And
have every city.
And there was a recent case in New York where a judge said bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal. Now, what's a bigger deal is the fact that the judge said, I'm not buying that. You can't use that as an excuse anymore. It's no longer your canned, I felt my life was in danger, I smelled marijuana, right. I detected the presence of alcohol. You need to actually have a reason, and that was a big deal. Now, the officer that was named for calling that out was Officer Pedro Serrano in New York City, and I thought that was awesome because Pedro Serrano is the name of the right fielder of the movie Major League,
right,
who said, fuck you, Jobu, I do it myself. And go ahead, do it.
Jim.
Go ahead, have your fun.
Who's the Allstate guy, Jim?
Pedro Serrano, which I learned exactly 30 minutes ago.
So Jim was today years old.
45 minutes ago.
Listen, Jim was today years old when he found out that the Allstate guy, the black Allstate guy, is the same guy who played Pedro Serrano.
All right, so first of all, good for you, Pedro Serrano. Good to see that you made a career out of telling Joe, Tim, fuck I, you, I do myself. That, Steve,
the fact that
you're right for calling me out is hilarious.
Tim, so how we came to this point was we were talking about this very thing, right? The guy's name is Pedro Serrano, right? And then I'm just like, also, right? Like, he was also the Allstate guy. And Jim looked at me and said, oh my God, you're right. And the look on his face, like,
I wish I had a better defense. I really do.
He was so stunned. And I almost threw something at him, like, bigger than a bottle cap. Like, I had to resist.
The only thing you had was whiskey that was way too good to bother
for me. Right. Like, the only thing I had was a $100 bottle of whiskey.
If there was a bottle of Heaven Hill in front of you.
Oh, my God.
Or
literally anything else in this house other than Blanton's, I would have thrown it in your face. The fact that you, like, oh, my God, you're right. No shit, I'm right, asshole. Like,
How the fuck do you not know that? I'm partially embarrassed and partially think it's fucking hilarious.
I mean, it is both of those things. You should be very embarrassed and it is very hilarious.
But anyway,
it makes you a shitty human being, I think.
I've learned to live with that a long time ago. I've been a consultant for 7 years.
You and me both.
And pot kettle is calling. But anyway, so this judge in New York basically said, bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, you said you smelled
that's
pot.
Not even that, which... You know, there's another judge in Chicago, Judge Hooks, Bill Hooks.
We've talked about him before.
We've talked about him before. He called bullshit on all the Chicago PD antics, right? Look it up. It was a story in the Chicago Tribune and the Sun-Times. It was a huge story because you had a judge coming out and saying, like, listen, the police are patently lying to, you know, to us and to the public day in and day out.
And getting away with it.
And getting away with it with impunity. Yes, and he was trying to stop it. And he couldn't, he didn't have a mechanism to stop the police from what they were doing. That's how fucked up it was. So this judge doing what she's doing is good. And for it to be happening in New York is better. But in the article that they posted, there was a police officer who said, listen, I get called to the scene and the cause for the stop and the search and everything is the smell of marijuana. But I get there and I don't smell a thing in the car, on the suspect, in the air, anywhere. He's like, so I know they're lying and they do it every day. But he's now, that cop is not on the street. They put him on a desk job because he, the cop, is suing the city over arrest quotas. Where the city would come in and say, you need to arrest this many people every week, every month, whatever. And if you don't, you're going to get penalized for it. So he's suing the city for that and saying, like, look, I'm throwing it all out there. These motherfuckers are lying.
And that was Pedro Serrano, right?
Yes. Yes, that was Pedro Serrano, who is also the Allstate guy, which you just know, but he's not.
In New York. He did hit a game-leading home run in the playoff game for the Cleveland Indians in the movie Major League.
But I just, the fact that you had a police, NYC.
A cop come out and say.
A cop like, who was willing to go
I was on told the record. You're not willing to lie, therefore we're going to put you on a desk job, says a lot.
Exactly, right? I mean, and this guy is like, listen, here's my name, here's my badge number, I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on. Like, there's a lot of value to that. And there's, like, listen, there's an issue with the police and how they treat the black community, right?
We've discussed that a little bit, yeah.
Right, we've talked about it. So, but people will come out and they will defend the police at all costs and say their job is so hard. Everything that they do is hard. And any criticism of them is...
Unpatriotic, blah blah blah.
But it's just like, listen, here it is in plain view, right? What they're doing is fucked up. Like they're helping to create a problem that only they can solve, right?
Right. Right.
So because of that, like we need to pay attention. And when you have stories like this, or the story of the police out of Baltimore, who literally it was The Shield, right? The show on FX. It was these, like, that's how these guys are, they're literally operating with impunity, ruining people's lives for profit, right? Yeah. They're not doing it to really, like...
To make the streets safer or whatever.
Right, like, they're not robbing Peter to pay Paul in order at the end of the day to get to the ultimate justice. Like, these dudes are literally doing this shit for profit. And so when these stories come out, like, that's why they're important. That's why we have to talk to them, like... We have an audience, right? It's not huge, but
no.
we have a good audience, and so it's worth it for us to call these cops out for their bullshit, right?
And the fact that a judge is doing it is a
right. Like you've huge got a judge and a cop in New York saying people are lying, and because of it, people's lives are being ruined. Like that's something that every single person should be terrified of, right? It shouldn't just be black and brown. People like, oh my God, that's the worst thing ever. Like, if you live in a fancy suburb, you should be completely paranoid that there's a cop who could come in and say, you and your wife are doing XYZ, and you and your wife's word doesn't matter, only their word matters. So you end up losing your freedom because there's no possible way to check these cops. And so by telling these stories and getting out in front of it, like, that's how we're able to push back. That's why we have to tell. And, like, if you're offended and disgusted by what you're finding out that these police, like, you should be, right? Like, you should be, and it should be something that you're aware of. And you should wonder, if this is happening in New York, could it happen in Cleveland? If it can happen in Cleveland, could it happen in Avon Lake? Could it happen in Rocky River? Like, could it happen on Long Island? Yes. Yes. Yeah. It can happen anywhere. Absolutely. So we need to think about... You know, holding our police officers accountable, because we give you a gun and a badge, which is we're giving you a lot of trust and we're giving you a lot of power.
Right.
But it shouldn't go unchecked. We should have the ability to check you. Right. So we need to know, like, now that we know that you're clearly fallible, Right? We need a way to check it. And so the only way you can check it is if you know about it, which is why we talk about it.
Well done. Man, there's so much more to get into. And I want to talk, if we can, a little bit about Jemele Hill's article from 2 weeks ago, because it hasn't gotten a lot of press and attention. And Jemele Hill basically said that the NCAA uses their power and financial influence to control young black men, if I'm being blatant about it. And she said, basically, if young black men said, instead of doing what y'all want and going to the Alabamas, Ohio States, whatever, if you went to historically black colleges and universities.
Grambling, Southern, you know.
Tennessee Tech.
Prairie View.
Tennessee State, sorry, not Tennessee Tech. Oh, yes. Tennessee Tech, too. But yeah, if you went to those schools, you could flip the balance of power. And if suddenly Grambling and Southern were going 12-0 and steamrolling Ohio State and West Virginia and so, Alabama.
I'm going to jump in here.
Jump in.
And
as the blackest guy in the room, you can do that.
As the biggest nigga in the room, I command.
I wanted to say that I did not use those words. But
anyway, so here's the thing about what she's saying. What she's saying is, listen, what draws the TV networks to Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and all the big schools, right? It's the fact that they have the best talent. The best talent is 99% black. So, best talent, instead of going to Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, USC, Notre Dame, go to Grambling, Southern, Prairie View, Tennessee State, all those schools, right? And so she's kind of right, but this is where she misses the mark a little bit. And a lot of the reason why these schools make so much money is because of deals they have with TV networks. And the reason they have
a lot of, how about,
well, 99% of,
exactly, here we go.
But the reason why these deals with the TV networks are so big is because of viewership, right? And so you've had generations of people, like hundreds of thousands of people who have gone to Alabama, Ohio State, Florida, Florida State, all the big schools that we all know. The question is, what does viewership look like for historically black colleges, right? Like, black people are roughly 13% of the population of the United States. So I guess if you got 100% of us to watch only HBCU games, then yes, networks would dump a ton of money into marketing and everything else towards those schools. And you would, you know, the historically black college football conferences would get all the money, and it, like, that's how you would shift the balance of power. But ultimately, like, listen, if all the black athletes did it now, like, what it would do is kill college football, period. Because it's the viewership of Alabama. How many people have gone to the University of Alabama? How many people have gone to, like, Ohio State's one of the biggest colleges in the country behind Texas, right? Right. Like, so they, I mean, they literally have 50,000 people a year. That's just regular students. That doesn't include part-time and all of the graduate and everything else that go through the doors of Ohio State. And Texas is the same way. And so you have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people who go to these universities that are well known. And so that's what drives the dollars into college sports. So what Jemele Hill is saying is, black athletes, fuck those people, go to your own schools. I like it in theory, but the reality is, the money's not going to shift and go to HBCUs, right? What's going to happen is that it's going to kill college football, and there's just going to be no money, because the networks and the advertisers aren't going to go to the HBCUs. And listen, the only people that are going to pay attention, well, and this is a big segment, but the only people who are going to pay attention to historically black colleges, if all the black athletes go to HBCUs, are gamblers, right? The gamblers will shift. And sure, bet those
in
games.
In a minute.
Right, like
that's the money's there. Yeah.
Right, like that's where the money's at. But, you know, the TV networks probably won't. Right? I mean, and I'm not shitting on the idea, but I mean, like, if what you would ultimately do, if you completely said, if for 4 years all the black athletes focused their energy on HBCUs, what would happen is all the other major universities would do whatever the fuck it took to get them back. They would make any and all adjustments, and you would, that's how you would create equity.
And there aren't enough HBCUs to totally flip the script. right?
No, there's not. There's literally not.
And I'm not saying that is a good or bad thing. I'm just being real. Like, they're just...
Right. It's just...
If Grambling, Southern, Tennessee Tech, and all those, they got the best 1% of athletes and on the field could do whatever they did, there'd still be big schools.
Right. I mean, like, you can think about it. You have five major conferences with, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 plus schools in the conferences. Like, that's going to leave a lot of room for people to play. And tell those kids,
don't take your opportunity because
you're... Right, like, we're all going to go to the same schools.
Cause, come on, kids.
Right, I mean, you could do that. And listen, if you want to make change, those sort of things have to happen. But the reality is, you would need 100% buy-in by the athletes. Yep. And you would need 100% viewership by black people.
Would you tell a kid in that situation, take one for the team? No, you wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Right. I mean, but even if they, but here's the thing, even if they did, the other part of it is that you need 100% cooperation from black viewership.
Everyone else, yeah.
Right. Like, so because black viewers are the ones,
or to lose white viewership because if
well, no,
how many Grambling games have you watched in the last 5 years? The answer's probably five.
Yeah, right.
I watched the Southern Classic, the Bayou Classic. Most years.
I do, just because the bands are fucking crazy.
The bands are cool, and it's the only football game on that matters that day.
And, like, listen, you can see, there's a lot of talented players.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Who come out of the historically black colleges. But in order for this to work, you need 100% participation in black athletes, and then you need 100% participation.
You literally need sacrifice in those 90% that don't get the job,
right? You would need 90% of black people to say... They care enough about this where they're going to watch, and it literally draws the attention of the TV networks and all the advertisers. That's right. The only way you could do it.
Which
is not going to happen, right? Now, I'm not criticizing her for saying it because...
She's making a valid point, an interesting point. I'm not shitting on Jemele Hill at all, but if I had my way, we would do a whole bunch of different things in the environment, but they're not going to happen like that. It's just not. And for me to say, well, if we don't ban plastic straws, which is not my thing, and please do not fucking email me, not you, but just in general.
In general, yeah.
Do not email me about plastic straws or I will tell you to fuck off. But generally speaking, like, you know, I have those interests and those issues, and great, but they're not going to shift overnight. We need to wrap things up. We've got a lot to talk about because I want to talk about, first of all, I feel much safer on the streets right now. Because for the next 14 days, Felicity Huffman will not be a threat to me.
Like, what a fucking joke. So Felicity Huffman, she's one of the Hollywood people who paid for their kid to get into school, I believe USC. And so, you know, she paid $50,000 for some guy to, like, lie on the SAT for her daughter to get into USC. I think they claimed she was on the crew team or some shit like that.
Yeah, there's crew. You're right.
And so they ended up saying she had to serve 14 days in jail and then a bunch of probation and whatever. Like, yeah, what a joke.
Who cares?
Right, what a fucking joke.
Who cares? First of all, if this is a prosecutable crime, which it probably should be, I'm not arguing that, but if this is the response to that, yawn.
Like, with all, like, either... Put her in jail for a month.
A year?
No.
I want do something. Look, I just spent 14 days on Long Island. I will take 14 days in prison. It actually wasn't that bad. I love making the joke, but it wasn't that bad. But really, is it that different? No, it's not. Okay, go to whatever. Fucking joke. And the idea.
I mean, 14 days is stupid, right? Like, I mean, I feel like at minimum a month. At maximum, a year. I mean, we're talking about, you know, tax evasion, fraud, all these other things. Those are crimes that we need to, like, hold people accountable for.
Okay, sure.
We do because, like, you know, stealing money from people and you know, being able to...
And hurting the public in general.
Right, well, because, like, being able to get something that other people have to pay a large amount for, that's cheating. Right, yeah. Like, so we should hold people accountable for it. So if we're gonna do it, do it. Right, I mean, but 14 days, like, you just threw out like a random number just to piss people off. Right? Like, I mean, like, what the fuck did you accomplish?
Hilarious. I find it hilarious.
Stupid.
That, like, she's, and if it goes like typical prison, you get a day off for good behavior, so a week.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Felicity Huffman, it's not fun for you. You have to leave the Hamptons, which, you know, boo-hoo. It, hilarious to me. Total joke. There are a few other serious issues going on, and one of them is that there's a lot of pressure on banning e-cigarettes, which I find really interesting because I have vaped for the first time in my life for about 7 months, and now it's becoming this scary thing where vaping will blow up your lungs and kill you, which maybe, I don't know. But it seems to me like the pressure on that issue has gotten really intense, and it almost feels to me like the folks who are anti-marijuana legalization or cannabis legalization are in desperation mode. What are your thoughts? Because I think that's
so.
Feels to me, like,
I actually don't think this has anything to do with marijuana.
All right.
So what I think happened was is people are pushing for gun laws, right?
Right.
Gun confiscation, red flag laws, registration, all this shit. And so I think what happened was you had the perfect nexus of events. And I don't think this was designed by Trump, but I do think it was designed by his team. So what happened was you have people calling for a ban on AR-15s and gun laws and red flag, all this shit. Then you had six people die from vaping. Now, what they don't tell you in these articles, the vaping was an issue, but they were also getting shit from their buddy's buddy's buddy, and it wasn't shit that they were buying from stores, right? And the articles where they have thrown that in there, they got it from Bob's Vape Shop or whatever, they've had to come back and do retractions because that's actually not true. Because again, these people were getting cartridges, vaping cartridges from random people that were really set up for them to fail.
Okay.
Right. So that's part of the story. The other thing is that, so this whole thing that Trump announced, it's not a ban that's coming from him. It's something that's been in the FDA's ability for the last 2 years, or longer than that, 3 years, because in 2016, the FDA had the ability to ban all like vaping nicotine products. Right, like, so anything that was battery operated, whatever, the FDA has had the authority to ban it, but they didn't, and they're not banning it now. What they're doing is they're saying, okay, we didn't come up with rules for any of this until 2016. So anyone who puts something on the market prior to X date in 2017 needs to come back and apply so we can review what it is that you're putting on the market. And what this will do is, it's regulation. They're going to regulate the vaping market and say, we need to test what it is that you're putting out there,
which
flavored,
is reasonable.
Right, like flavored or non-flavored. And then as we test it, we'll approve it and put it back on the market. So it's not a ban at all. But I don't know if Trump knew that. Right, like if Trump didn't know that, I think someone came to him, what I believe happened, someone came to him and said, hey, FDA is about to ban e-cigarettes. We can use this to our advantage. The whole gun debate, we're not saying anything. So say you're going to ban e-cigarettes and you're going to tell the FDA to do it. They're going to do it and we'll be good. And I think he said, okay. So he said, hey, we're banning flavored e-cigs. But then it comes out that the FDA is like, well, it's not a ban. We just want to test everything that's going on in the market and then put it out. So then Trump comes out today with a tweet saying, we're not banning e-cigs. We just want to make everything safe. MAGA, blah, 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 whatever.
Right. So now, the big thing was that the e-cigs that were flavored to be, you know, sweet and lure kids in was something they were trying to fight against. And that makes sense to me. However, yawn. It's like...
Well, it's not a yawn. And so there's two things that happened. One, I don't think he understood what was happening, right? I think someone who also didn't understand what was happening saw an opportunity. They tried to take advantage of it, come back. They're wrong because it's not a ban. So he's got to come out and then say it. But how they're trying to spin it is that Trump was trying to play 4D chess or 8D chess because he's so smart.
he's ahead of the game, right?
He was trying to scare people who were, you know, anti-Second Amendment and show them how overreacting to social blah, 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 blah. And this is why we can't do gun control, right? Like, that's literally the argument of people who support Trump. They're saying that he was thinking, you know, 10 steps ahead of the game.
Right.
And that's how he was spinning it. And I'm saying bullshit. He had no idea what the fuck you guys were talking about. You guys are pulling this shit up after the fact. Your correlation isn't completely off, but it's not completely right. But that has nothing to do with anything. Ultimately, what's happening is FDA isn't banning e-cigarettes. They're coming out and they're saying you have to, you know, submit it for testing to make sure that it's not going to kill people. And you have to adhere to these certain standards to put your product out there.
Which I've talked about doing cannabis testing, so I'm all for that. All right, we should wrap this up soon.
Let's wrap it up now.
Wrap it up now?
Yeah.
Just real quick, John Bolton got fired. Not a shocker. John Bolton ruffled feathers, and fuck him. Odell Beckham Jr.
Why don't we do this? We're not going to squeeze it all in. We'll just do a bonus episode tomorrow.
Sounds good. All right. So we are at Whiskey Congress on social media. So Instagram and Twitter, we are at Whiskey Congress.
On all the social media things.
You can email me, jim@whiskeycongress.com, steve@whiskeycongress.com. Thank you for listening. If you want to send us some money, we'll appreciate it. And we're out. Thank you.